Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better on this week's episodes. In the red corner, we're heading to Westerberg High School in Sherwood, Ohio, where a group of girls known as the Heathers are the queen bees, the top of the food chain, the most powerful clique or clique in the school. Yes, it's time to row out to the middle of a lake with a bottle of tequila, my sax, and some Bach. It's going to be very. From 1989, it's cult classic Heathers.
I wanted to be a member of the most powerful clique in school.
Dear Diary, Heather said she teaches people real life.
You were nothing before you met me. You were a Girl Scout cookie.
Does it not bother you that everybody in this school thinks that you're a piranha? Like, I give a shit.
Heather number one just looked right at me. You a Heather?
No, I'm a Veronica. I don't really like my friends.
I don't really like your friends either.
There are people I work with, and our job is being popular.
Maybe it's time to take a vacation.
I just killed my best friend.
And your worst enemy.
Same difference.
While in the blue corner, we're heading to North Shore High School in Evanston, Illinois, where a group of girls known as the Plastics are the queen bees, the top of the food chain, the most powerful clique or clique in the school. Yes, it's time to stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not gonna happen. From 2004, it's so fetch. It's mega hit Mean Girls.
We have a new student with us. She just moved here from Africa.
Welcome.
I'm from Michigan.
Great.
I'm 16. Until today, I was homeschooled. And then it was goodbye, Africa. And hello, high school.
Hi, I'm Katie.
I'm Janice.
This is Damien.
Watch out, new meat coming through.
This map shows the school's central nervous system, the cafeteria.
You got your cool Asians, burnouts, jocks, the greatest people you will ever meet, and the worst.
So you've never been to a real school before?
Shut up.
Shut up!
I didn't say anything.
Plastics.
Who are the Plastics?
They're teen royalty.
That's Karen Smith.
She is one of the dumbest girls you will ever meet.
I'm kind of psychic.
Really?
It's like I have ESPN or something.
Gretchen Wieners.
She has two Fendi purses and a silver Lexus.
An evil takes a human form in Regina George. She knows everything about everyone.
That's why her hair is so big. It's full of secrets.
We want to invite you to have lunch with us.
Regina seems sweet.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
Your house is really nice.
I know, right?
Being with the Plastics was like leaving the actual world and entering girl world.
So what connects these two films and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release
Release the Kraken!
Greetings and salutations, Clash Podders. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
And just to be absolutely sure, you are sticking with Chris Tilley as your name for the moment, Chris. I only ask because I noticed on Twitter that your niece has started referring to you as Uncle Tim. I have to say I like it, Uncle Tim.
I don't like it. I asked her who Uncle Tim was. She said you. You're Uncle Tim.
How old is she? What's she, 28 now, 29?
She's pushing three. And it was funny at first. Now it is getting to me a little bit, but...
I quite like the fact that one of your followers, a guy called Dan, said, "Ooh, you could go for Little Timmy Tilly," which also tickled me. Little Timmy Tilly. No?
No, that's not catching on. Call me Great. Chris. Call me Chris Thrilly.
Oh, no.
Okay. This is Victoria, and this is the artist formerly known as Chris Tilley, now Chris Thilly. Right. Heathers versus Mean Girls. These were my choices this week. Initial reactions to these choices, don't think about it. Just say the first thing that comes into your head. Victoria.
Thrilled and scared.
Okay. Chris.
God, you are needy, Alex. I liked your choices, Alex, okay? I enjoyed them. It's all good. Needy, isn't it, Vicky?
Yeah, you deserve
that. What did you think of
that,
my choices?
Yeah. Was it all right, Uncle Tim? Did you like it?
Yeah, you thought I was bad before isolation. I've become a monster over here. Right. The clue that I gave you, dear Clash Podders, on Twitter was... American high school is awful unless you're one of the popular kids. Our continuing resource for future Clash pairings has delivered this week. Peter Robson says the faculty versus Carrie. I like that combo. I haven't seen the faculty in years. I think that's nice, guys.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay. Good. Einsteinium says 10 things I hate about you versus Clueless. Good pairing. High school movies.
I'd love to do that. That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, based on classic literature. Paul Logue says Degrassi Jr. High, the movie, versus Grange Hill, the movie. There is a Grange Hill, the movie. It's basically the plot of Ghost, but instead of Patrick Swayze, it's Zamo. So that's a possibility. That's a very niche reference. And finally, we've got a new listener in Rhys Page. Do you want to say hello to Rhys?
Hi, Rhys.
Hi, Rhys.
Great. He said, I think it's Mean Girls versus Clueless, but my wife thinks it's The Breakfast Club versus Pretty in Pink. You were closer, Rhys. We had a couple of right answers this week. This is the C, Kirsten Ellen Hoyle, but first in was Joe. So well done, Joe, in lieu of an actual prize. And to quote Thanos, or at least paraphrase him, you have our respect, Joe. Great. Let's do connections then. What do you think the connection is between these two movies? Who'd like to start?
I will start. I've got three. Can I just do all my three at once?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll take that as a yes. Okay. The protagonist vomits at a party. Lame. Representing Africa as a country, not a continent. School canteens are terrifying.
Okay. Three solid ones there, Chris.
Thanks.
Mrs. Waters is a good one that I didn't realise until doing my research.
Yes, go on.
So the writer of Heathers is Daniel Waters, and his brother, Mark Waters, directed Mean Girls.
No. Yes, of course. No, wait. So just to clarify, I knew that, but I didn't know they were brothers.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? I had no idea that they should both make two such similar films. I wonder if when he was shooting Mean Girls, if he told Daniel what he was up to and Daniel wanted to have a word. Hold on, wait. I already did that.
It's funny because Michael Lerman, who did direct Heathers, said that they inquired about him directing Mean Girls. And he said he wasn't sure if he was being offered it or it was just an inquiry. And he said, no, why would I want to do that? I already made that movie. he does go on to say, I think Mean Girls is terrific. It's not Heathers. It's Heathers-esque. It's influenced by it, but borrows a lot of stuff from it, but is closer to the John Hughes world, which Heathers set out to undo. So I've got a couple of connections for you. One is sort of more leaning towards Vicky's thought process, which is that both films show the lead's redemption by having her be very nice to an overweight girl.
Yeah.
And both have been turned into successful stage musicals. Mean Girls is a musical, which is opening in the West End next year. So my actual connection is quite a personal one. I wasn't popular in school because I was the only pupil out of 2,000 who carried a briefcase, and therefore I love movies where the cool kids are taken down, which I've shortened to try and make more general and less personal, so this doesn't turn into a week of therapy for me. Just because you're the cool kids, you don't have to be cruel kids. Am I right, guys?
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That is good, yeah.
By the way, Vicky, did you know that Alex had a briefcase at school? It never seems to come up.
You should see my face. I'm so shocked because you would never, if you've known him for any length of time, it's not a story he's ever shared with me, to be honest. No, it really isn't. It's not like it's something he said when I first met him and has repeated, I would say, at least every 6 months in the intervening period. So I've heard that story, let's just do the math, 40 times.
Listen, it's a difficult time to be making new memories at the moment. I can't help it. What should we do? Shall we do your introduction to Heathers then, Chris? Because I gave Victoria Mean Girls, I gave you Heathers. We do it chronologically. So without further ado, Christopher, take us on a journey.
Heathers is a film that gently fucks the audience with a chainsaw by making fun of bullying and bulimia and mass shootings and rape and murder and cow tipping and suicide. Winona Ryder and Christian Slater play Veronica and JD, a pair of star-crossed lovers who bump off the bullies at their school, most of whom are called Heather. They start by poisoning the head Heather with drain cleaner and making it look like suicide. They then shoot a pair of jocks, making that look like a suicide pact. But their actions backfire, their victims turning into martyrs and becoming more powerful in death. So JD tricks the whole school into signing a mass suicide note before attempting to blow the place up. But he fails, Veronica sees the error of her ways, and the film ends on a weirdly optimistic note. Discuss.
Corn nuts!
My teen angst has a body count. This is a tragic thing.
Hallelujah.
We scare people into not being assholes.
What did you say, dickhead?
I did not want them dead.
You did too.
Did not. Shut up.
I love my dead gay son.
You were out of control.
That knife is filthy.
What do you think I'm gonna do with it? Take out her tonsils? Ha! Is this as good for you as it is for me?
Life can suck. That's it. We're breaking up.
So what is your relationship with this film, Vicky?
It's the second time I saw it in the week. The first time I saw it, I just thought that was weird. And the second time I saw it, I thought I was slightly more annoyed by it this time. I can see why it's a cult classic. I do have a lot of love for it, but I just found it a very strange journey.
Interesting. How old were you, would you say, when you saw it the first time?
Oh, I was older. I would have been like 18, 19. So sort of past the point of being feeling exposed because of what it reveals about high school necessarily.
Mm. Alex? Mm.
I'm stroking my beard. That was thoughts provoking. I watched it. I know exactly where I was when I watched it, which tends to be when a film has quite an impact on me. So I was on holiday in Scotland on the banks of a loch, and my family who I was with had gone to bed. I was about 10 years old. and they'd gone to bed, and I stayed up and watched Heathers, and I felt very rebellious staying up past my bedtime to watch Heathers. So I identified a lot with JD, which didn't happen so much this time round. But I remember not having seen anything like it before, like aware when I was watching it at 10 years old that this was something fucking nuts. And I watched it again this time, and I still have never seen anything like it. But a little bit like Vicky, I have more reservations. First time round, blew my mind, loved it, and therefore it filled that gap, which it fills for a lot of people, of this cult classic. This time, I have questions.
Yeah, I was skirting around saying the obvious, which is a really shallow response. But the first time I watched it, I really fancied JD, and the second time I didn't, and therefore I didn't like it as much.
I thought the first time I watched it, I was like, I want to be him. He's the coolest thing I've ever seen in a movie ever. I was like, this guy is brilliant. And that quote I just gave at the start about taking a bottle of tequila,
my God,
to the middle of the lake with his sax and some buck. I was like, who was I at 10 years old that I didn't hear that and go, I'm wrong. This guy is the worst.
It worked on me. I was like, wow, we could row out and listen. It's just ridiculous. But then you watch it now and it's like, shut up.
You are the worst. Hey, get Ram and Kurt in. They seem more fun.
Exactly.
Oh, Alex.
Yeah, I really did love him. Like, I think I based a lot of my style and identity around JD as a child. Yeah.
And certainly initially in the film, you're supposed to love him. I mean, he is supposed to be likable and cool. And I think that's just good, right? But we can get onto that.
Yeah.
I have lots to say about JD. Mine's similar to your experience with it, Alex. I can remember the first time hearing about it was reading a review in maybe the first issue of Empire I ever bought, which was issue 2, and I think it was coming out on video, and I remember that review being like,
I'm sorry, it's that level of detail that I miss when I don't speak to you for a week.
And you can tell that there's an undercurrent of absolute annoyance that he doesn't have issue 1, that he didn't start at the very start. Annoyingly, it was issue 2.
Yeah, I blame them though, because I think they put Dennis Quaid as Jerry Lee Lewis on the cover of issue 1. Who's buying that?
You're killing me.
Issue 2 was Batman and Indiana Jones and Ghostbusters on the cover. Yeah, yeah. That's the issue.
Oh,
I see.
Yeah.
Idiots.
Oh dear.
And so, yeah, I think my experience was similar to you, Alex, that I loved it when I was a kid, but I was probably too young to really understand a lot of what was going on. Shocked by a lot of the humour in it, probably confused by some of the humour, not really understanding what the joke was, but laughing because it made me feel grown up.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And I think a lot of people, and me included, watched this and didn't sort of see it as a satire. Like, I didn't understand what satire was at 10 years old when I watched this. So it was just like, these characters weren't mocking like the traditional high school movie. They were just kind of cool, weird characters in this film.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I didn't really realise what it was meant to be until I watched it this week. I just thought it was like, oh, wouldn't it be like a wish fulfillment? Like, wouldn't it be good to be able to do that at school?
Yes. Yeah. And for wrong or for right, mainly for wrong, the bit where he pulls a gun out in the canteen and shoots blanks at those guys, I was like, yes, I'm going to do that when I get bullied in school, which I never did. So, and also that's the film's fault, not mine.
And I revisited this 2 years ago, almost exactly, because Michael Lehman was over to promote the Arrow Blu-ray release of this with a bunch of new extras. So I interviewed him, which means I've got some good quotes from him, actually. I was able to put some of my questions about the film to the man himself.
Great.
But let's go into a bit of the background on the film. So it was written by Dan Waters, who's all over that Arrow disc, and he's an interesting character. He's a very funny bloke. He decided to write a high school movie for Stanley Kubrick. That was his plan, because he went through Stanley Kubrick's back catalogue. He hadn't done a high school movie. He thought it was time. And so he wrote it based on what he'd witnessed at high school. He said he wasn't the class geek, even though he comes across as the class geek, if I'm honest, in all these interviews. But he had his own satirical column in the school paper called Troubled Waters. Which he claims that gave him some celebrity and cachet, but I'm not so sure. And so he'd written the script. He gave it to his friend Larry Karaszewski, who is a really great screenwriter. He co-wrote Ed Wood, Man on the Moon. Just recently he did Dolomite Is My Name. They're best mates. He was at film school with Michael Lehman, who had just done a short movie called The Beaver Gets a Boner, which I watched. That's on the Arrow disc. And it's very funny. It's the beaver in question is actually the mascot of the American football team at the school, rather than anything ruder. But... yeah, it's. I mean, it's sort of brash and obnoxious. It's very much a John Waters homage, that short film is. And you can see some of... I think there's bits of John Waters pulled into Heathers as well. And so Waters said that Stanley Kubrick didn't get back to him when he sent him his 250-page script. but Michael Lehman did. And Lehman said to me, he said, I felt that the John Hughes movies, as good as they were also in a way, in a safe and conventional in their portrayal of adolescence and teenage life. They were really good, but my experience of high school had been much darker and Dan's script reflected a much darker vision. But he said he read that first draft, which was 250 pages. He said it had a lot more murders. the murders were funnier in that. It had more social satire. But he said the big difference was Veronica was much more complicit and much less sympathetic.
It's an interesting point that. I think he compared her to Travis Bickle, didn't he? He said she was much more like Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver. And I think part of, which we'll get onto, part of the problem with this movie is the fact that they've kept some elements of her being complicit, but tried to soften her. I think he said that when he met Winona Ryder, and because of her warmth as an actress, he started to rewrite the character as a much warmer character. But I think like you get two different Veronicas at various points in this film, which doesn't entirely work for me. But very quickly on the Dan Waters thing, like I know we were talking about him recently when we did Demolition Man. I didn't realize then that he'd also written Heathers, and I didn't realize until that we were doing I was doing my research for this. Batman Returns is that's Dan Waters. I had no bloody idea, and when I sort of realized that, I was like, yes, of course it is, because Batman Returns is like the Heathers of that original Batman series. And I kept thinking about, you know, in Batman Returns where the Ice Queen or the Ice Princess dies, like the good-looking, popular girl who's meant to turn on the wholesome Christmas lights and then is on top of the building and Batman doesn't save her and she falls to her death. And in doing so, her body turns on the lights. I remember as a kid going, that's horrible. Why is that in this movie? Like, Batman should have saved her. What is this film? In the same way, when the first Heather carks it in this, I'm like, what is happening? So I get that now. I get it a lot.
In terms of the casting, Drew Barrymore came in to read for Veronica, but she was too young, they decided. Dan Waters wanted Jennifer Connelly. New World offered it to Justine Bateman, who'd been on Family Ties, but she passed on it. And Winona Ryder really went after it. She was obsessed with it. They'd had her recommended by the screenwriter of Beetlejuice. They'd seen her in a couple of teen movies, and she got the role.
Did you see the quote that Dan Waters said about about casting her when he was told that they were going to go with Winona Ryder?
I mean, he said a couple of unpleasant things about her. Was it that?
Yeah. I was like, but he said it recently. I'm like, what? It's kind of funny. Like they did interviews for the recent, this is recently, the Blu-ray release. And he was like, he said, Winona Ryder, she's just not that attractive, which is a hell of a statement.
And not true.
Yeah, right.
He was referring to her teen movies, but she made before this one, though, where he said he
Lucas,
keeps saying that
yeah.
she wasn't very good looking. That's his sort of, yeah, whatever, Dan. Heather Graham was up for the head Heather. They really wanted her. But interestingly, her father is an FBI agent. And he said he thought the script was satanic. So she didn't take the role.
Yeah. Because Michael Lehman actually sat down with her and her parents and tried to convince them that they weren't, in his words, the tools of Satan. But
wow,
they would have nothing to do with it. He said he really tried. He begged her because her reading was so good. But no dice.
There's a film idea in there somewhere, I think, about trying to convince Heather Graham's dad about satanic panic and that he might have it wrong. I don't know.
Well, a couple of years later, Heather Graham appeared in something that I think genuinely was satanic because she's in Twin Peaks. So she got her way in the end. I spoke to Michael Lehman about some other casting as well. He said, we decided to put together a table read. So we just gathered actors we knew and friends that we had to read the roles. And an actress named Stacey Travis brought this young kid from her class, a good looking kid. He cold read the part of JD at the table read. And years later, I found out it was Brad Pitt. I have a tape of it. He said, not only can I remember, because I said, was he any good? He said, not only can I remember if he was good, I can listen to it whenever I want. And I asked him if he would let me listen to it. And he said, no. But obviously Christian Slater got the role. He was they liked him from In the Name of the Rose. And Lehman said to me,
oh shit, In the Name of the Rose, I totally forgot about that film. We have to do that. Sorry, side note, that's a great future Clash pod.
Quite funny to me. He said, the role on the page was a little bit hard to conceive. Was the guy supposed to look like James Dean and be your archetypal teenage bad boy, or was he supposed to be more unhinged? How would that play? I thought Christian brought a good interpretation to it, maybe a bit more Jack Nicholson than I would have expected.
Yeah, no shit. My God.
But he says, and they all say this about him, that is Christian, that's how he is. But what I liked is that he was appealing and menacing at the same time without being your cliche juvenile delinquent teenage bad boy.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's verging on copyright infringement, the Jack Nicholson stuff. Like, is he related? Unless he's related to him in some sort of loose Hollywood way, if I was Jack Nicholson, I'd be like, what the fuck do you think you're doing? Like, it's out of Chinatown. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
But he does say, I mean, Christian Slater himself does say, and he chose his words carefully. He was like, yeah, I was channeling Jack Nicholson. You're like, channeling.
Copying.
it's another C word. Yeah.
But he does sound like Jack Nicholson in real life as well. Do you think that's sort of put on?
I didn't. When I saw this, I don't think I was aware of Jack Nicholson age 10 that much. So I've reverse engineered my opinion, having read other people comparing it, and now I see him as Jack Nicholson. But I don't know. I don't think it's that bad.
I do. I think there are some lines that if you closed your eyes, you wouldn't know because it's a mimicry. And there are some lines that he delivers where he sounds like a man who sounds a bit like Jack Nicholson, and that's fine. But there are just some lines where it's like, it's so similar. It's ridiculous, in fact.
Should we talk about the movie then?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I try and pick four or five of the best scenes to focus on. But I found with this one that every scene has something. There might not be big scenes, but every scene's got a memorable line or a moment. I think it's very well sort of structured, this film, but it kicks off. There's a lot of stuff in the first 10 minutes. So we start off with a croquet match between the Heathers.
Croquet is so often used to tell you that people are posh in films. It's like this posh sport, like especially in American movies. It's like they're playing croquet that they're posh. I feel like by now, even through osmosis, I should know the rules of croquet. But it's still, to me, the most bewildering sport ever. Like, even though you just sort of go, right, croquet, posh, got it. And at no point you go, what on earth are they doing? What's going on?
When we were watching the scene, so I was sat next to Mark and he went, oh, so I suppose you don't know how to play croquet. And I thought we were sharing a laugh, as in like neither of us would know, because why the fuck would we know something like that? So I laughed with him, like, oh, he's being nice. I was like, oh, yeah, no, of course I do. And he was like, no, I'm being serious, because I do. I was like, what? And it's something that he used to play on the lawn at his aunt's cottage. I was like, you think you know someone. You think you know them. I know. It's ridiculous. So I was like, what are the rules of this? Anyway.
I love the fact that story started with, oh, I thought we'd have a laugh together. I thought he was being nice.
No, he wasn't. Any opportunity for a dig, he never lets up.
I used to play croquet for the county.
Oh, of course you did.
Well, me and Alex were busy playing Knock a Door Run. You, yeah,
we were playing Kick the Can on the back street.
I didn't really. I was just trying to see if you'd actually believe that.
I did believe you.
And so we meet the colour-coded Heathers. We've got Heather Chandler, played by Kim Walker, who's in red, which represents her power. You've got Heather Duke, who's played by Shannon Doherty, and she's in green, which represents her envy. And Heather McNamara, who's played by Lisanne Falk, who's in yellow, which represents her cowardice. And they wear those colours throughout the film. So it's very heavily stylized, this whole film. The costumes, the sets, everything's a bit too cool for school. The set designer on the Blu-ray says she was going for death by sarcasm with the look of the film. and she wanted everything to be an eye roll. But how do you think the fashion in this film has dated? I think everyone looks great.
They look amazing. Amazing. I was really stunned because it takes a while to sort of appreciate, obviously very late 80s, but normally when you see that, so you're just like, it must have been itchy and uncomfortable and it looks bonkers. But everyone looks fantastic.
Any one of those Heathers could be a future Halloween costume for me. So I'm a fan.
I didn't realise how much I'd missed the Swatch watch until it mentioned in this film.
Agreed. That was such a big deal. When I got my first Swatch watch, man, I'd made it.
No. Look at you now. Yeah, I dreamed of having a Swatch watch. We used to look at people with Swatch watches and go, oh, one day, maybe.
And the shoulder pads, Vicky, would you have been a shoulder pad person, do you think?
In the 80s? Yeah. Anything to scare men, yeah, sure.
It's a power move, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Of course you would. I mean, you'd be a terrifying woman in the 80s. You'd have shoulder pads like so wide that you could, but the edges touch door frames as you walk through.
In this scene, you notice in the background the Shannon Doherty Heather is reading Moby Dick, and the reason for that is because they couldn't get the rights to Catcher in the Rye, which they all agreed would have made a lot more sense in the context of the film.
She's great in it, Shannon Doherty. They talk about her a lot in interviews. I wonder, did Michael Lehman mention her at all? Did you ask him about her when you interviewed him?
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, he said that she came in and she was fantastic, but she wanted to play Veronica, because obviously she was quite a big star already, at least in TV terms. I mean, she'd been on Little House on the Prairie and Our House. It was her a show she was starring in. But they said to her, like the casting director said to her, we've already cast Winona. And they told Michael Lehman this, and they were like, we've told her that Winona's playing Veronica. And he was like, yeah, she said she knew that, but she was willing to read the part of Heather Duke, but she wants you to know it's not the part she wants. And then Dan Waters chimes in with, she wanted to be the lead Heather and Veronica too, and JD.
But she's reading Moby Dick, and she's reading it for the whole film until she becomes the top dog herself. And then she stops reading it. She's got no interest in learning anymore. And that's because the idea, I think, there is her character has caught her white whale, which is to be the head Heather. And so she has no need for education anymore.
Agreed.
Yes, I too wrote that down in notes that I have no need to show you.
And at the end of that scene, Veronica is in the ground with her head poking out and they are firing balls at her. And so suddenly we're in this heightened reality, which kind of tells you that this isn't your average teen movie. And I think that by pulling the rug out from under you so early in this film, it kind of keeps you on guard for the rest of the movie, because they do throw in dream sequences and flights of fancy all the way through.
Yeah, I see that now, but when I watched it for the first time, I thought they were literally using her head. Do you know what I mean? Like a sort of, it wasn't heightened
they are,
reality.
Aren't they?
No, I know they are, but do you know what I mean? As in, that it's a real world scenario where they've dug a hole that's person size and to be able to fire balls at Veronica's head, not like this is something we could do, but we are doing it in a sort of very realistic way. I don't know.
Yeah, I see what you mean. They've taken something that in another film would be a fantasy and gone, we're putting those fantasy elements into the real world. So in our movie, this is actually happening, right?
Yeah, yes.
Right, I agree with Victoria.
And then we're into the cafeteria scene, which Waters said he envisioned as being like the Godfather wedding sequence. He wanted it, I think, in his original script, it lasted for 20 minutes. I think it lasts a bit too long in this version, to be honest.
It's far too long.
It's a way of introducing the characters and the cliques in a way that a lot of teen movies have done since, including Mean Girls, which we'll talk about on the next episode. But in his head, in Waters' head, sort of high school is this microcosm of society, and he's introducing all these different elements in society via the lunchtime poll that the Heathers are going around dishing out. And at the same time, we find out that Veronica is good at faking people's handwriting. And so in an act of
which
really
is amazing for someone whose own handwriting is utterly unintelligible scrawl, which I'm again assuming is a joke, but it's because obviously she's wearing a monocle and a kimono as she's writing her diary. So you're guessing this is already a bit mad, but like her writing is just ridiculous.
Her writing is ridiculous. And in this scene, we also get a lot of, I mean, it's very quotable film, isn't it? It's almost like it's been written Dan Waters clearly spent a lot of time on this script. I think years and years getting it just right. And what is your damage, Heather? Fuck me gently with a chainsaw. They all want me as a friend or a fuck. Like everyone speaks in these very quotable lines.
He said it's embarrassing in an interview. It's embarrassing that people love the lines in this because I stole most of them. I used to work as a camp counselor. What's your damage came from one of my little camper girls, Jamie, who used to say it all the time. One of my college friends used to say fuck me gently with a crowbar. And then I realized crowbar sounded too masculine. Chainsaw was more feminine, so I changed it. So what? He said, yeah.
What?
Right. I'm pleased you said what. You know when you're reading something and you just sort of go, yep, cool, chainsaw. Chainsaw more feminine. Gotcha. But then I sort of reread it. I went, how is it?
No, it's not.
And it was Dan Waters' sister who, when she was at high school, could fake other people's handwriting to forge letters. So he just nicked that from his own sister. And we also meet Jason Dean, a.k.a. JD, in a none too subtle allusion to James Dean. So he's played by Christian Slater, as we've said.
And he's so hot.
He does seem like the perfect boy at first, doesn't he? But as Dan Waters said...
Greetings and salutations. The minute that comes out of his mouth, I was like, cool, definitely. I think I definitely probably said that as a kid after I saw him say it. In hindsight, not really that cool. Kind of annoying and long. Like, get on with it.
It makes me feel embarrassed because it shines such a harsh light on what, like, teenage me thought was attractive and that 38-year-old me is mortified by. Like, all you had to do, like, was look underneath your fringe at someone and the affectations at sensitivity, like, I like bark, like, come on. And just to speak very slowly and a sort of drawl and to pretend to be disinterested, but disinterested flip into, like, extremely intense. And I was like, oh my God, I'd do anything for that boy. And then it's years later, it's so cringy. And so he's not appealing to me at all, but then he's not supposed to be appealing to an old maid like me anymore. But at the time...
Did you just refer to yourself as an old maid?
I am an old maid. It doesn't matter what you say. I feel so old.
No, you are.
I'm the same as you, Victoria. Like, I saw that trench coat and I went, I'm gonna get one of those, gonna wear one of those. And did. I wore a long trench coat regardless of the weather, just like JD. And Columbo, yeah. I'm not sure where it came from. It was
They were going for is what they were watching. Dan Waters was watching teen movies, watching the cool kid in those movies, and realizing that to behave in the way that guy's behaving, you'd have to be a psychopath. And so he kind of worked it back from there. That slowly but surely, we see his ego, his moral superiority, and it becomes clear that he's a cold-blooded killer. And it's funny, something that it did actually remind me a bit of was a film that we've done before, was American Psycho. in the approach it takes to this kind of subject matter, where he's, you know, all charm on the surface and underneath is the psycho, but also the kind of blackly humorous approach to dealing with a character like this.
I still thought he was cool on this rewatch. Like there was a little dent in the armor when he went row out to the middle of a lake with some tequila and my sacks. I was like, okay, maybe
I thought he said
I'll
sex.
That one.
So that threw me off because of his Jack Nicholson impression. I thought he said row out into the middle of a lake with some sex. And I was like, oh yeah, great. Oh no, that isn't what you meant at all.
Have you ever made love to Bach? It's fantastic. And then, but the bit in this rewatch, the bit where I went, oh, well, fuck off, JD, is when he's trying to force himself on Winona Ryder in his home after he's, because I think it's the same scene where he shoots the radio. And I'm not going to lie, I once threw a remote at a functioning TV, and I didn't think the TV would shatter, but it did. And I still went, that's annoying. And yet, pretty cool, because JD shoots a radio in Heathers. So I'm a bit like JD. So that's how much of an effect he had on me.
When did you do this?
Like maybe 4 years ago. I had wine. I didn't just in the cold light of day throw a remote at TV. I didn't like something that happened on TV. I cannot remember what, and I threw a remote at it. You know, flat screen TVs should come with like a manual that says very fragile screens, don't throw remotes at them. So
was this at home, Alex?
Yes, this was at home.
See, at least rock stars do it in hotels. And do it on other people's property. You did it on your own property.
I'm only a rock star in my own home.
I'm just pleased you did it because you were annoyed, not because you were trying to get off with someone. That would be worse if you were like, yeah, watch this. Oh, fuck, I've broken the telly.
Yeah, let's pretend that wasn't the situation. Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He just says, how many holes does a straw have? 0, 1, or 2? The internet can't figure it out, so I've done what any sane person would do. Ask the Luke and the Pete.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Luke Moore for an unplanned half hour every Monday and Thursday as we talk about, well, anything really, from your emails to life's great mysteries to this guy.
The noise you're going to hear sounds like a man being interrupted by a car. He isn't being interrupted by the car. He is making the car sound.
Sí, man, that's a hippie.
Por qué?
How on earth is he doing that? Beep, 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 beep.
How does he make that noise? Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beep, 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 beep.
The Luke and Pete Show is a Stakhanov production.
Let's jump to the first murder, because Veronica's had a very unpleasant experience at the Remington party, surrounded by very rapey college guys, and it's something of a nightmare, that sequence. And so,
oh, but it's got one of the best lines in it, where the guy goes, "It's great to talk to a girl and not have to ask what major she's doing," and then he immediately runs out of things to say and goes, "So when you do go to college, what do you think you'll study?"
It's very good.
Very fun. Very funny. And so she starts telling JD about the horrible experience she has, and she says that she starts talking about murder. She says she'd like to see Heather Chandler puke her guts up. JD picks up the drain cleaner, which he calls Big Blue, and Veronica accidentally takes the wrong cup upstairs to Heather, the one containing the actual poison, not milk and orange juice. Or does she? Like, what on this watch? I was starting to question what was intentional, how aware, responsible Veronica was for some of this. Had she found a weak, sort of unstable boy to do her bidding? And I was hoping the commentary might shed some light on it. And although they mention that some people have a theory that Veronica is controlling the situation from the start, they don't really take it any further. I don't think they buy into it. But it really could be read that way, in the way she keeps suggesting things to JD and then she pulls back, but seems pretty happy when he goes through with them.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this, Victoria? I actually do have, I have some thoughts on this. Victoria, go on.
I hope it is Chris's version, because that's a bit more exciting rather than her just, by the time you get to the second murder, it's like you don't get it. Like, it's, you know, when they're talking about shooting the jocks with the bullets that make you whatever it is, they're tranquilizer bullets or something. And she's like, yeah, cool. But, you know, your boyfriend saying that to you, having just poisoned someone, that's the time when you would question that. I say, oh, but do you remember the last time we tried to accidentally hurt someone and it didn't go very well? So it's like she's not understood what he's about, and that's irritating. Whereas if she's secretly in on it but doesn't want to put herself in the way of too much guilt or blame, that's a much smarter, funnier story.
I think... You have to believe that she knows what's going on. Otherwise, she's a fairly weak protagonist, because this is Veronica's story, this film. And this is the moment where she's supposed to... If she doesn't know and it's all JD's plan, then she's just reacting. Like, for the whole movie, she's just reactive. Like, you need her to have at least on some level gone, yeah, I want to do this. This is my plan. And then you can sort of like, design it after that, where she's like, however you want to do it, but you kind of want her to be the one in control to a certain degree. But that aside, this scene is incredible. I got so excited when this scene was coming at this time. I remember watching it as a kid, and this is the moment, despite all that had come before, fuck me gently with a chainsaw, him with a gun firing blanks, all of that. I was still like, oh, this is a bit weird, but I could process it. At this point, I went, what the fuck am I watching? This is insane. And watching it this time, I got giddy with excitement when this bit came up and she goes headfirst through that glass coffee table. I was like, this film is brilliant all over again.
And Heather Chandler's a great villain, played by Kim Walker. And so they kill the villain off sort of 20 minutes into the film, which is quite a shock. But then, of course, she can be replaced. That's the whole issue with the Heathers. And so I think it's really good writing to throw you off like that. But actually, once one Heather gone, another one will just pop up, and another. And you can never get rid of them because they're universal. They're in every school, in every country, you know?
Yeah.
The one dark thing I did read was that Kim Walker, who plays Heather, who says earlier in the film, she asked Veronica, did you have a brain tumour for breakfast? She actually died of a brain tumour at 32.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, that's terrible.
So that's a bit of dark Tilly trivia there. Apologies for that. I like the suicide note as well. I really enjoyed the fact that what inspires JD is the fact that she's got the cliff notes to the bell jar, which is just a funny idea, which I hadn't really clocked before. In school, there's a sequence coming next where whatever Veronica's going through inspires her to go into the shower and stand there with all her clothes on. And in that longer script, Dan Waters talked about the fact, and they actually shot this, that the other girls in solidarity join her in the shower fully clothed, and the geeks sneak into the shower and find a hole, and they're like looking through the hole just like in Porky's, but they're looking at fully clothed women showering and crying rather than sort of pornography.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really funny. Clearly, we all think that's funny, but they watched it back and said it wasn't funny at all when you watched it. It just didn't work, and so that didn't make it into the film.
It's a bit on the nose, and it's a bit like we are parody.
Yes, it's parody.
It could almost
isn't it?
Be. It's parody. It's you could see something like that in Animal House, maybe. I can see why they didn't put it in. It's around this point in the movie that Veronica says something interesting. She basically, I think I struggled with what Veronica wanted to happen, at various points in this movie. I think that's the one thing that I got a bit lost with, was what's her plan? And she says one line in the movie, which I feel needed to be emphasized elsewhere, because it was the moment I went, oh, okay, so that's what this is about. And she says, I just want my high school to be a nice place.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, so that's what, from all of this, that's your goal. Because and then it sort of gets cloudy again. I don't know what you thought of that.
I think she's, if the high school as society, I think she's supposed to represent the masses. So she just wants things to be nice, and she sometimes falls in with the wrong thing, and she sometimes falls in with the popular thing. She sometimes does something that she knows is wrong, like when she writes the note that's meant to be from the popular boy to Martha, and then that embarrasses Martha. She does it because she doesn't want to be cast out, but she knows it's wrong. So she sort of represents like the middle road, the middle way, which is why I think she sort of flip-flops about a bit, because she's sort of malleable, because she's meant to be, I don't know, like populist maybe.
Right, I can see that. Yeah,
we've got the first of a couple of funerals next, which are both brilliant scenes. In the first one, the priest is blaming MTV video games, and I love the fact that I hadn't really clocked before, you know, when you're at a funeral and you go up to the casket, you've got your back to the congregation, but here everyone's facing the congregation when they speak, because it's all a big show. You've got the editor of the school paper stands over the dead body and says, "Dear God, please don't let this happen to me, as I don't think I could handle suicide." That actor committed suicide a few years later.
No. Yeah. Oh my God.
Chilly trivia is incredibly dark this week. But,
apologies.
Thank you for
trivia for a dark film, but I'm just stating the facts. Followed by one of the jocks saying, "Jesus Christ in heaven, why did you have to kill such hot snatch?" a bit disrespectful, but quite funny.
Interesting. That was, it's Ram who says that. There was an interview with him recently. He said everyone on set, the actor who played him, everyone on set stayed in their clique. So I was kind of a jerk through the whole shoot. Me and the other guys were sending inappropriate notes to Shannon and the other girls in character between takes. Sexually inappropriate notes that a high schooler might send. Probably wouldn't be able to do that now. That was probably very of the time, being able to send inappropriate notes on a set. I was in character.
And those jocks pretend that they've had a sword fight in Veronica's mouth, which is a fantastic choice of words. Sounds unpleasant for everyone involved.
Yeah.
It sounds unpleasant for everyone. I don't know who gets anything out of that. No one's having a good time there, surely. And so we've got the murderer. We've got the murder of Kurt and Ram, which... it's problematic. So they pretend that the jocks are in love with each other. I guess the idea is that they've been homophobic throughout the whole film, these two, and so they're turning them into the thing they most fear. So I see
that's
the logic.
I think that's the nice No, that's the nice reading. This obviously, it's easy to look back and judge, but that's true. The jocks have been homophobic, so you turn them into the thing they fear. But the conversation takes place between JD and Veronica, who, just by dint of their character so far, we believe them to be like quite accepting, quite progressive, all the rest of it. And it's the bit with the mineral water where they're like, JD's like, I'm going to dress the set to make them look gay, basically. And the mineral water joke, I think is funny, but if you've earned it, with respect or with representation, there isn't any positive representation of gay people in this film. So you haven't earned that joke. You can't do it. You can't have your two lead characters be basically as homophobic as the people that you are taking the piss out of.
Yes, you know that. Yeah, I would really trying to figure this stuff out and what I don't like, what works. And you're absolutely right. If there's not a positive gay character in the film, and therefore it's mean-spirited and as cruel as the characters they're sending up, I guess.
Well, Veronica does say, hey, a lot of people drink mineral water. It's come a long way.
It's weird that, isn't it? Like, when you look at reading it, watching it now, you're like, yeah, we know.
The joke was supposed to be Perrier, but Perrier wouldn't allow them to use.
Well, the thing was, there had been a decline in the number of people drinking mineral water in the US, and it was only when they started drinking Perrier in the late 70s to the 80s that mineral water was on the rise again. So it's relevant, it's topical, it's still offensive, but it is topical, so half a point.
So the next funeral, we've got Veronica laughing at this funeral, and the little sister of one of the guys sees her, and we realise, as she does, that she's become a monster at this point. But she's still, but she's more frustrated about the fact that the people she's killed have become martyrs than she is with the fact that they're dead. She's upset that she says, as she puts it, suicide gave Heather depth, gave Kurt a soul, gave Ram a brain. And so, you know,
what, like the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, the Wizard of Oz.
You know, the film was criticised for glamorising suicide, but I guess the point is, no one really commits suicide in this film until the very end.
People
are murdered, and as ever with satire, you know, they're sending up the way the media and the school treats the subject of suicide rather than the deaths themselves. We also get a bit of background about JD, though, as well. We meet his very strange father. There's something quite twisted about the way their roles are reversed.
But it's a good writing, because that whole thing of like, oh, hey there, son, I didn't hear you come in, and like, not now, tiger, like the little sweet terms that they swap between father and son. On paper, and the way that they do it, it should be really cute and loving and whatever, but there's so obviously something wrong with them and something missing, which obviously turns out to be a handily dead mum. But it's really well done, because it's really jarring but funny and empty, as well as being overtly like saccharine as well.
Yeah, and as you say, that we find out that his mum died by walking into a building 10 minutes before his dad blew the building up. So it's all quite on the nose as we near the climax that's coming.
do you know what I've just remembered? The first time I saw this, and the second time, until far too late, when he says, the last time I saw my mum, she was in a library. Sorry, I can't say. She was in a library in Texas. I thought, oh, did she shoot John Kennedy? I thought he was saying she shot JFK. Now there was was it even in Texas? I don't know.
It was in Dallas.
It was in Dallas, Texas.
you've just done that joke that people that famous stand-up joke where somewhere people go, yeah, people always ask you, do you remember where you were when JFK was shot? And weirdly enough, I do. I was on the fourth floor of a book depository in Dallas, Texas.
So you see, I thought they were being snide about, oh, I don't even know what I thought, but I thought she assassinated the president of the United States. And it took me a really long time to shake that off.
But he's kind of a weird dad. And Veronica's parents are almost like they're catatonic, sort of sleepwalking through life. They reminded me, so some of the stuff with the parents reminded me of Donnie Darko a little bit. I think that film took a bit from this in terms of those strange relationships with the parents. And also, Dan Waters said that he was sick and tired of the parents being responsible for how the kids behave so much in teen movies. He said, when me and my friends were teenagers, we didn't care about our parents. We didn't talk about them. You know, we were so self-obsessed that they were an irrelevance. And that's why that's how he wanted to sort of pitch the parents in this film. We meet an old friend of Veronica's, Betty Finn. And this is a bit of an inside joke if you're American, because Veronica and Betty are the two characters in Archie Comics, which are big in Riverdale, the two most famous friends. But actually, if you look at their last names, they're Sawyer and Finn. So they're based on Tom and Huck.
So okay.
An in-joke that we can appreciate outside of America.
Yeah, thanks.
Martha Dunstock, or who they call Martha Dumbtruck, who still hasn't spoken a word yet in the film, who's bullied throughout. This is the moment when she walks into traffic. And then, I don't know, I feel like it's a bit off here where Veronica starts becoming emotional and moralizing to her parents. And I guess she has to see the error of her ways and what's happening. But I feel like it doesn't ring true with the black humor of the rest of the film. What do you
guys think?
I think
it was just an opportunity to like shoehorn in, but fine, like some really brilliant dialogue exchanges. Like when Veronica's like mourning onto her mum that all teenagers wanted to be treated like human beings. And the mum says quite rightly, like the time you whinge the most is exactly when we treat you like human beings, which is totally true. And then Veronica says, oh, I guess I picked the wrong time to be human. And her mum says, oh, you'll live. It's like, that's really, really clever and really like on point.
Yeah, I do. I'm just on the Martha dump truck. I think she's really good. She was the actress who plays her, I think it's Carrie Lynn, was I think she was a stand-up when they found her, and there was an interview with her, and she's just really honest. She was like, I think most of why I was cast was that I looked the part. Where else are you going to find another 400-pound young person? I think I came out of the womb obese. I had no friends. I was Martha Dumptruck in real life growing up in Beverly Hills, and now I've got therapy. Dan Waters says there was an ending that he wishes he'd fought for, although I think he might have been joking. But it sounds like quite an interesting ending where he wanted Martha Dumptruck, as Veronica starts talking to her, pulls out a knife and stabs her and says, fuck you, Heather. And Veronica is on the ground laughing with a knife in her stomach saying, my name's not Heather, my name's not Heather.
That's brilliant.
Right?
And then we're into the finale. So JD wants he wants to infect his generation, his Woodstock for the 80s, and that he does by blowing the school up while there's a pep rally happening in the gym. He's got everyone to sign a bit of paper that's kind of like their suicide note collectively. Veronica confronts him, shoots him in the finger, shoots off his middle finger, his favorite finger.
That upset me when I watched it as a kid. I was like, what's happening to JD? Why doesn't he shoot her back?
That's right. Take his side.
10 years old.
He dons a suicide vest and walks out of the school and blows himself up away from the school rather than underneath it. And we get a very sort of weirdly happy ending, I think, where Veronica invites Martha to her place to watch movies, and Martha says, I'd like that, and we're at the end. There were some alternate endings. Alex has already mentioned one. I'm going to talk about a couple of them in the bits, actually, because I've got a couple of quotes. But yeah, I mean, it didn't test very well, this film. One person wrote on their card, these people don't know if they're making Porky's or Blue Velvet, which I think is quite funny.
Get that person back. They're a great test audience member. They've got a reference. They've got references that extend from Porky's to Blue Velvet. Well done.
In Europe, this film had a different title, which surprised me. There's a trailer on the Arrow Blu-ray, and I watched the trailer, and it had a different name at the end. So it's called Lethal Attraction all across Europe.
Oh, wicked.
Because they wanted to cash in. Oh. Lethal Weapon had been 2 years before and Fatal Attraction a year before.
Amazing.
They had the first cut was 3 hours long. Dan Waters rather loved it. But of course they cut it down, and the next cut of it.
Of course he did. He wanted half the movie to be the canteen scene. He was like, brilliant, that'll do.
The next cut was, he thought, killed the film. He sent a letter to the editor calling it a bigger dog than Digby. And he said, I haven't seen cutting that bad since La Bianca's Stomach, which is a reference to the Manson murders.
Jesus!
So Dan Waters is a very dark human being. But although it wasn't a big hit at the time, it has become a hell of a cult film in terms of, I think, the way it's influenced films. I think you look at the Coen brothers and Tarantino, the humorous approach to violence that they take. I think this is one of the first times you saw it that sort of brutal in a film and played for laughs. Yeah, and I was going to say one connection between this film and Mean Girls actually is that both the lead actresses, their careers sort of went hit the rocks a little bit after this, and they both spent a long time trying to get sequels off the ground to their respective movies. So I asked Lehman about a sequel, and he said, we talked about it. I think Winona, more than anybody, had an interest in doing a sequel. She really liked the idea, but we never really figured out the right way to do it. Winona suggested taking it to Washington, D.C. in the world of politics, which we thought was good, but we never did it. We just never got around to it. But I don't know. It feels to me like a film that doesn't need a sequel. I think anything you do can only... You know,
that story about the sequel is it's a funny one. It sort of sounds a bit like Michael Lehman and Dan Waters just kept winding Winona Ryder up because she was really keen on a sequel, like you say. And it was like Dan Waters actually says, I came up with a crazy cockamamie Heathers 2 where Veronica becomes a page for a senator named Heather, played by Meryl Streep. The ending is her assassinating the president and getting away with it. And then Waters says, I told Winona about the idea without any more elaboration than that. And a year later, I hear from her saying, so I talked to Meryl and she's in.
yeah, but it has had a life in terms of there was a musical that played off Broadway, as you mentioned, Alex, in 2014. And it was in the West End in 2018. It sounded like it lacked the bite of the film, and the reviews were pretty mixed, but it won an award in London for the best new musical. And then there was a TV show in 2018 that was pretty controversial. It was delayed airing due to a high school shooting in America. And then, very sadly, had to move to another network because there was another high school shooting before it's about to air. They cut and edited it due to the material therein because these shootings happen so frequently. And so the 10 episodes got cut down to 9 while they took out some of that insensitive stuff. But it got really, really horrible reviews. I've got one from the Daily Beast here, and it said, if you believe that kids these days are fragile snowflakes, that political correctness is running amok, and that LGBT people are now society's true bullies, this new Heathers is the show for you. The premiere of the rebooted cult classic takes place in a universe where the football team is oppressed and yesteryear's fat, queer and black victims now rule the school with manicured fists. This show feels like it was written for aging Fox News viewers who get angry about people's gender pronouns.
Jesus!
So it sounds like they completely missed the point of the film.
Yeah, I'll say. Is it wrong that I want to watch it now because of how fucking mental that sounds?
Yeah, it sounded like it was a version of Heathers for Donald Trump's supporters, which is, yeah,
that's a thought, isn't it?
but who goes? Right, we're looking for a movie to really really celebrate conservative values. What's that movie from ages ago? Heathers. Yeah, let's use that. Just joining those dots. What are you doing?
So yeah, that was supposed to be an ongoing series, but it got cancelled. So that's Heather. Should we do the bits?
Yeah, let's do. I don't know why I'm coming up with a new theme for the bits section. I just meant let's do the bits.
Well, you sound keen, Alex. So do you want to do your favourite scene?
Yeah, we're starting with best scene. Okay, we start with MVW normally, but okay, best scene this
week. I can't let that go. We don't. I'm sorry. I wouldn't normally throw you under the bus like that because who cares? But it's the thin end of the wedge, Alex. We don't.
So do you know what? Let me just tell you what I feel like right now. I feel like the football team in the TV version of Heathers. So maybe stop oppressing me.
God, the thought of you in a football team just makes me laugh. Go on.
While we're on the subject of football, K Sarah Sarah, the song that this film ends on, a cover by Sly and the Family Stone. I believe that's a football chant, isn't it, Chris? Don't they use that when teams are on their way to Wembley?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes!
Yeah, it's K Sarah Sarah, whatever will be, we're going to Wembley. K Sarah Sarah.
So yeah, I'm just saying it. Maybe it's not that difficult to believe me in a football team right now, because I knew a song that football team fans, football team fans, as I believe they're called, sing.
Alex, what's your favourite scene, which we always do first?
My favourite scene, I mentioned it already, Red Heather. Heather 1's death when she drinks the Drano and crashes through the coffee table. It was back then, as a 10-year-old watching this, as Dan Waters, I believe, describes it, he says, I think this movie was the first experience of a lot of people for that kind of subversive, dark humour where, like, things are not going to happen the way you think they're going to happen. This is going to break every mould that you've come to believe a movie like this will do. And at that point, I did go, what am I watching? And even this time, I giggled with excitement when it was coming up. So Heather 1's death, if that's not too weird.
I'm going to jump in, actually, because when I interviewed Michael Lehman, weirdly, I asked him what his favourite scene was. It was almost like I knew that 18 months later, I'd be doing a podcast where that was a section that we asked that question. And he said, I do like the moment around Heather Chandler falling through the coffee table and JD and Veronica writing the suicide note. I thought it was great in the script and I like how it turned out when we shot it. Vicky, what's your favourite scene?
It's when Heather smashes through the glass coffee table. That's another vote. Honestly, I'm not just doing it to fit in. That's really what I thought.
Excellent. And my own personal
one. What's yours,
one,
Chris?
It's something I noticed on this viewing for the first time. So earlier in the film, when they're sitting in a car, JD and Veronica goes to light JD's cigarette, and with the lighter, she burns her own hand. And then rather than help her, JD lights his cigarette on her hand.
Why do you like that? It's so fucking nuts. What? Do you like that?
Why does Vicky have to jump in before I've finished? So, at the end of the film,
yeah,
Veronica's standing on the steps with a cigarette in her mouth. And JD, waiting for JD to blow himself up to light her own cigarette on his pain. Because he lit his cigarette on her pain. So I love the way that that pays off later in the film.
Yeah. Mm. I didn't notice that.
Your classic setup payoff situation there.
But it's so subtle, I didn't notice it on three viewings. So,
no, I only noticed it this time as well. Yeah.
MVW, Vicky.
I've got three. I hope that's all right. Number one, every single outfit worn by Winona Ryder. I'm just going to ignore him, especially the monocle. I don't wear enough monocles. That is an error. Number two, the line, which I'm going to say all the time, from I think it's Shannon Doherty to Winona Ryder, why are you pulling my dick? I'm going to say that constantly. I don't know how that passed me by. And number three, I think I've only got two. Oh, shit. Having said all that, I think I've actually only got two.
Good.
Oh, no, wait. Yeah. Shannon Doherty herself. She's brilliant. Okay, I finished.
Alex. MVW, most valuable, whatever.
She struggled with actually saying that line, Shannon Doherty, because she came from a very fairly conservative family, and she didn't like any of the language, and she didn't want to say any of the language. In fact, "fuck me gently with a chainsaw" was actually her line that she refused to deliver, and she really struggled with the line where she had to say "dick." So a little bit of a Shannon Doherty fact there. My MVW is the script, Dan Waters' script. I love it. I love the lines. Each of them individually taken out of the context of the story are fantastic. And I just love the effect some of them had on me as a kid. And indeed, my favourite line in my MVW section is actually a weird one. It's when the hippie teacher goes up to Veronica and says, or whether you kill yourself or not is one of the most important decisions a person can make. And Veronica goes, get a job. I'm gonna use that all the time now. When anyone goes, get a job. I love it.
Well, they say that everyone has a great novel in them, but I'm with you, Alex, on this. Maybe Dan Moore's had one great script in him, and it was this, because some of the turkeys he wrote after this, maybe not his own fault. I don't think Hudson Hawk was his own fault. But Ford for Lane is not a good script. So, yeah, I love that script, but as you've gone for it, my MVW is going to be Jack Nicholson.
No. I approve of that.
and not to take away from Batman Returns, man. Come on, Batman Returns is a great script. I know he only sort of co-wrote it with Sam Hamm, but it's a great script, Batman Returns. Batman Returns is a great script, Chris.
Yeah.
All right, great.
What would you change, Alex?
Okay, so I would change... I'd have the school blow up at the end, please. Thank you. That would be the best ending, the original ending that Dan Waters wrote. I'm like, what? This is a movie that has at every turn, like, done something surprising. And, like, what could be more surprising than to end the movie with the school actually blowing up? You can have your cake and eat it. JD can still die, but... Like, the school needs to blow up, because just that idea of, like, it needs to end with a prom, first of all. JD should be trying to blow them up, and it should be a prom upstairs, like all high school movies, like that. Whatever the cheerleaders are doing, dancing around in front of the kids in the gymnasium, don't like that. It should be a prom, and it should blow up, and then you should see, as Dan Waters intended, like I think you mentioned it already, Chris, there should be the prom in heaven that he wrote, where all the kids are dead, and they're having a prom in heaven. That's like, this is a movie that sort of pulls its final punch. And yeah. I just find that
weird. So Waters said, Lehman actually said as well, that they felt that a film that was anti-suicide shouldn't end on the hero committing suicide, that it would stop being a satire and might encourage copycats. But Lehman said to me, and I'm in agreement, actually, that the ending is what you said, Alex, that he said, Dan had written an ending in which JD blows up the school. It ends with a prom in heaven. That's the ending that we tried to get made. That was the ending that was in the draft of the script that went through the works at New World Pictures, but they wouldn't do that. And the idea at that prom in heaven, Alive and Kicking by Simple Minds would be the song that was playing, which I guess that ties in with Breakfast Club a little bit, doesn't it? Martha Dumptruck would be singing opera, and that they'd all be drinking blue punch, which is the drainer. So
it would have been great. I heard the same thing. It was a studio that said absolutely not, which is like ugh. But like, you know, and then you could even have, you know, like Heather One, Red Heather there, and she's not a bitch anymore. Whatever. It's a better end, and not it ends in such a low key. JD just blows himself up manner. I don't like it. Thank you.
Vicky, what's your change, if any?
Well, I think it should definitely end with a prom, because I'm a real sucker for like end on a dance or end on an event or a show and a prom. And a prom is such a rare thing, because I know that you in UK high schools, I think they have proms now, but we definitely didn't. So it was always like a really rarefied experience. But Veronica and Martha should go to the prom together, and with Martha as her date, and they should both look amazing and have a brilliant time.
Ooh, and girl then power, it blows girl up. Power. You know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that touched a nerve for you somehow? Do you want to look inside yourself?
Chris, do you want to come round and shoot my TV with me?
Better than
so
hanging out
come
with
out of this well. Better than with hanging out with what? With burn your bra over here. Shut up, Chris.
Self-righteous spice.
So much!
Oh, wow.
Oh my god.
Oh, he wouldn't say it if we weren't recording remotely.
I know. Is this because I texted you in the week and I said that marriage is a patriarchal trap? Is that what this is about? Because why don't you just text me back and then we'll sort it out?
please don't make our WhatsApp group sound that boring.
That's the kind of fun we have. Just fucking statements from Vicky.
We then have to look up on the internet before answering.
I'm crying.
Right. That's done.
Oh, dear.
Oh, right. So that is the end of Heather's. These were my choices. Would you like a quiz?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Cheers. Okay, then. So the quiz this week is high school taglines. I'm going to give you a tagline. I've got a few for each film. I'm going to read them out in order. And from the tagline, I would like you to tell me what film it applies to. They're all American high school movies. Is that clear?
Yes.
Yes.
Great. So we'll start with the first one. The scores are going to be written down by me. I'm on it this week, so we will have a winner. I know how competitive one of you gets.
Yeah, Vicky.
Marriage is a patriarchal trap. Here's your first tagline. There's something about your first piece. I'm going to carry on reading until someone says
Oh, American Pie.
Oh, very good.
It's the right answer.
Very good.
I'm just thinking about cakes in high school films. <You're> stupid.
Your next one. They only met once, but it changed their lives forever. Five strangers with nothing in
Breakfast
common
Club.
Except each other.
Oh!
It is correct. It is the Breakfast Club. Okay, next one. See it with a bud.
Dazed and Confused.
It was the... Is correct, oh. Christopher. The next one only had one tagline, which they were clearly very happy with. Sex, clothes, popularity, whatever.
Clueless.
Is correct. We are level pegging with only a few to go. Actually, quite a few. I wrote too many. Okay. Next one. Best friends, social trends, and occasional murder.
Oh, no. Heathers.
Is correct. Yes. Okay. The next one is quite easy, very famous. One man's struggle to take it easy.
Easy, okay. Eh?
Risky business?
Nope. Leisure rules.
Right.
Because life is too beautiful a thing to waste. While the rest of us were just thinking about it, blank borrowed a Ferrari and did it.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, it's yeah, correct. Okay, so it's 5-1? No, sorry, I wrote V down next. So it's 3-2. 4-2, sorry, to Vicky. Welcome to Girl World.
Mean Girls.
Survival is correct. Here's a tough one. Grease is the word.
Grease.
Grease.
Chris got the point.
I knew that one.
Okay. May the best moves win. Winning isn't everything.
Oh,
it's the
fuck.
Only
Bring
thing.
Bring it on.
It's correct, Victoria. I think we found your niche. Yeah. And your final movie. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 3 to Victoria. Let's see whether this one changes things. Spoiler, it won't. If you liked Scary Movie, we don't give a shit. They served you breakfast. They gave you pie. Now we're going to stuff your face.
Not another teen movie.
Is correct.
Never seen it.
Okay. So, Victoria, well, it's very good, actually. And I didn't realise it's Chris Evans, Captain America, in it. Congratulations, Victoria.
Yay.
How are you feeling?
I feel amazing. Thank you.
Great. Right, just before we say goodbye, you can obviously get in touch with us, as always, on Twitter. At ClashPod is where we are. Loads of extra bits and pieces about the show and, indeed, where we post our clues to next week's show. You can also get in touch on email, show@clashpod.com. Christopher, you have been monitoring our email account. Tell us more.
Yes, I had an email, received an email that I liked, so I'm going to read it out. Some of it from Kirsten Young. She said, I love Tilly trivia and I don't know how Alex can keep up that energy and enthusiasm, and I love how Vicky is both your moral compass and also the bad kid.
so brilliant.
She also said she loved your laugh, Vicky, but everyone says that in every email, so I left that bit out.
Oh, thanks for reading that out, because you didn't have to. Or, and you could have cut the nice bit off about me and I would never have known.
We also love those reviews on iTunes and Ash1984. In his reviews, or her review, said, the three are so funny together. There is banter between them and it's clear they are good friends, which makes this pod work so well. How wrong you are, Ash. How very, very wrong.
Unfortunately, wrong.
It takes it out of us every week trying to like each other. No, thank you very much for those comments. Let's move on to next week's show. Chris, they're your choices next week. Would you like to give us a clue so we may guess?
Certainly, Alex. Your clue for next week's films are Nice Planet, We'll Take It. That clue is Nice Planet, We'll Take It.
That's good. I like that. I think I might know that one already. Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, Chris. Nice Planet, We'll Take It is the clue. We will be back on Thursday where we are going to go through Mean Girls led by the wonderful Victoria with just the best laugh. If you have the time, please do rate and review us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. It is useful and appreciated. And you guys are the best. Speak to you on Thursday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.